Well, thank you for tuning in, Connecting the Diocese, the broadcast from the Diocese of La Crosse, Wisconsin. My name is Jack Socia. We are now in the weekend of the second Sunday of Advent, a good time to take a breath. Everyone talks about how quickly all this goes by. Well, stop right now, take a breath, and appreciate. You're listening to a little music from Paul Cardal. He's a gospel recording artist, musician, and composer. And he is making this recording you're listening to courtesy of a donated heart. That's right, he's a heart transplant recipient. Talk about gratitude this time of year. He also has a Christmas CD, which I'm going to order. This particular CD is called Miracles, The Journey of Hope and Healing. Amazing to think that he's creating this music for Christmas as well as for Advent, at a time when he knows that if it wasn't for the generous donation of someone else giving him a heart, he wouldn't be here doing it. Kind of sets you back a second to take a breath and just think how thankful we all are for so many things this time of year. Coming up in just a bit, among other things, we'll be talking with Jack Feldsheim, the editor of Catholic Life magazine, about things coming up in the magazine, how his family is doing, celebrations going on, of course, and just all kinds of things for Advent and Christmas. So stick around. We'll be back in just a little bit, right here on Connecting the Diocese. Back when I was a young man away from home, I was constantly underestimating how long it took to mail a Christmas card or Christmas package to my parents. They would then call me, or I would call them on Christmas Day, and I'd say, "Did you get my card and package?" And my father would just say, "No." It had just enough tinge of disappointment that it made me understand that, once again, I had not quite gotten something right. So to save you from further distress, here are the United States Postal Service dates that you got to get stuff to them to get it in time for Christmas. APO, FPO, and DPO, all zip codes, priority mail, and first-class mail, you need to get it to the post office by December 9th. Now, if it's U.S. Postal Service Priority Mail Express Military, then you can have till December 16th. Those cards and packages mean a lot to guys and gals who are overseas, so try to get it in on time. Meanwhile, back in the States, retail ground service and first-class mail, including greeting cards, you should get it to the post office no later than December 17th. If you're shipping Priority Mail, December 19th, and if you're really in a jam, Priority Mail Express Service is December 22nd. However, as the fine print states, the U.S. Postal Service says these dates are not a guarantee, especially because the 2 weeks before Christmas are the busiest time of year for the post office, but shipping by those dates is your best bet to make sure the gift or card arrives on time. Now, if you totally mess up and miss all these dates, and you know darn well the envelope is not going to arrive on time with a card in it, you could try this. Get your kid's bicycle and just roll the front tire gently over the front of the envelope so it looks like it leaves a little rubber mark when something gets stuck in a machine somewhere. Then, of course, you can blame the post office, even though it wasn't really their fault. Now, of course, that is just a joke. Don't take me seriously. But take me seriously when I say December 17th is a good time to get your cards out, if not sooner. Well, as promised, we have a special guest on that I haven't talked to in person for a couple of years because I haven't been here. We are actually in the new and improving studio at the Diocese of La Crosse. Jack Feldsheim has joined us. Jack is the editor of Catholic Life magazine, but better known around these parts as the guy who held the communications department together for probably, 10 years?
Well, Jack, you're being a little overstating on what I did, but I'm certainly happy to be here today, and it's good for us to be together.
The new things that have happened here in the past several years involving technology, radio, podcasts, streaming, video masses done up proud, all this stuff, was you and Zach, and also a lot of help from you and Zach.
And well, I'd like to say that we were definitely responding to the Holy Spirit. The last 2 years have been a struggle for so many people. We've tried our best to keep everybody connected, and that's the trick, and that's why we're here.
But also the work with the videography, for lack of a better word, of the special events at the cathedral, the audio quality, the patching in of everything. From a technical point of view, it was kind of like, wow, this is really good.
Zach and I have a real love for the cathedral, and he has such an eye for knowing what takes a picture well. what areas of the cathedral. And so he was really able to bring that to life. And our hope is that people that watch the live stream mass or see some of his videography, they really are inspired to come to the cathedral and enjoy its beauty now after its restoration. It's just all ready to go.
And it's the right time of year to be doing it. We are in the second Sunday of Advent. The show will be running on Saturday and Sunday, but it's the weekend of the second Sunday of Advent. And, you know, last weekend, at first there was, you know, Thanksgiving, and they're getting crazy over that. Then, boom, Black Friday hits. And then let's go out Saturday and see what we missed kind of thing. Advent started. We covered it, obviously, and we talked about it. But a lot of people were kind of like, oh, yeah, Advent started. And there's, I think, a number of people who don't really, they kind of know what Advent is, but unless they saw it on the calendar or maybe it got mentioned at Mass, it's Christmas, isn't it?
Advent, what it is and what it inspires us to do, I think, is really what I find interesting about Advent. It is leading up to Christmas, and, you know, for Catholics, it's kind of the time where, is this penitential? Are we to celebrate or not to celebrate, or how are we supposed to do this? But I really liken it to kind of a countdown, if you will, to Christmas, but a countdown in an introspective and a way to look at what's around us and what's leading us up to Christmas. There's the Jesse tree, you know, and that is the day-by-day tracing of our salvation history. There's the Advent candle, and we have our daily meditations. We light another candle each week and as we lead up to Christmas. And it just gives us a lot of activities to do inside of the church that Lent really doesn't offer.
There's one of the Christmas songs from one of the Christmas movies is, "For the time of Christmas is here," they sing. And broader sense, we are in the time of Christmas. Christmas isn't here yet. And as you well know, the merchandising side of Christmas is intense now. And all of a sudden on the 26th of December, when really you can enjoy Christmas for so much longer, it kind of like they quickly get it away and they're breaking on Valentine's displays.
Yeah. We go to the store and obviously our mind is like, whoa, you know, everything's going around. But when we're at church, I think that calls us to ground ourselves in our faith and in our salvation history. Listen to the readings each week, and if you're able to get to daily Mass as well, but they're all leading up to the promise. They're all leading up to the root of Jesse. This little area that is thought to be dead has now been received this promise. All of the messianic prophecies, we're going to hear those, and then they'll be fulfilled at Christmas and then after. And it's just it just inspires your mind to imagine, you know, what it was like back then, and to be waiting, you know, for the promise, and then to be part of the promise. You know, we're so blessed.
Yeah, it really is wonderful. People sometimes just kind of like, they forget the part that this is God speaking to us. This wasn't like just something just happened. My wife, which was much smarter than I am in a lot of this stuff, said that this hasn't lasted for 2,200 years out of an accident or a theory that was on, there was no internet back then, it was CamelNet. This is something that is a historical thing. Even in the Quran, these figures are mentioned. They're not positioned the same way we do, but that it's undeniable. Yeah. I mean, there are Roman records, and you can find all kinds of things. So this is something that actually happened. These people who say, well, it was all made up 200 years ago, come on.
Yeah. It definitely is not a made-up story.
No, it's definitely not a made-up story.
And the promise, the messianic promise from way back, predates, you know, obviously, and the false prophets. You know, there were other people who came claiming to be the Savior, the Messiah. You know, and they had a group of people, and they didn't carry forward. But like you said, the Messiah came, Jesus Christ came, and we are still in marvel, wonder, and talking about it today.
Yeah, and the idea that, yeah, if you were going to stage this thing as a production, hoping it would last for a long time, you wouldn't have them being born in a barn. When they were going back for the census, all the world was going to be taxed. That was really, go back to your hometown. And I forget how many miles away they were from that. It was a long ways away. They were essentially unsheltered. I would maybe even say homeless during that period of time. I mean, they were going back to his home, Joseph's hometown, but I don't know whether he had any relatives there or anybody who could take him in. And obviously they couldn't because they had to go into a stable. But
That's such an interesting meditation, you know, just wonder what was like, you know, what was it like in Joseph's mind? What was it like in Mary's mind? Yeah. And how were they working together through what they were called to do, to go to Bethlehem, to report the house of David?
It's an amazing story. And again, the idea that this was somehow just made up some time ago, doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But for a lot of people, you got to stop. And again, as you say, one of your best bets is to go to Mass, to spend some time in church, and not get totally wrapped up in all of the other stuff that goes on. Last week, we used a little bit of a Christmas suite that was done a number of years ago, finished in time for a show I had a long time ago called A Child of a Christmas Heart. And the composition that is for Advent starts out with the hustle and bustle of the crowds. I mean, you can just, it's musically done, but there's just scattering around. You can just imagine them running. And then weaving through it is O Come, Emmanuel. And the trick is that if you kind of lower the volume of the weaving around, scurrying stuff, the O Come, Emmanuel lifts up.
Music is so much a part of Christmas, yeah. And most everybody knows Christmas songs. And, you know, you think about the songs that you grew up with or the songs you listen to today, and it just brings so many memories.
Oh. Bishop and I have done a thing every year. Actually, I've replayed it every year, where he's recounting his favorite carols and what the meaning is for them. And everybody has stuff like that. And it's a good idea to just spend some time more quietly on these things and sit back and listen. And, you know, there's this idea of anticipation going on. Anticipation for a Christmas party or a Christmas parade. Well, they're fun, but this is such a rich time. There's a lot of people right now who, for one reason or another, are essentially unchurched. The times have been brutal, and they think that, well, you know, I'm not going to get involved with this. If you want to be, as you said, centered and more just more calmer and understanding what's going on and appreciate this. This goes by, this Advent goes by so quickly. This is the second weekend already. I mean, before we know it, you know, stop. Yeah. Just hold on.
Yeah, we do not naturally find ourselves in a quiet spot. You know, it's not easy for us to say, no, I'm, you know, going to leave my phone away. I'm going to just leave the house, leave my phone there, mm-hmm. and be gone for 2 hours. It doesn't happen, you know, very often. And sometimes it can be uncomforting because it's like, well, what if somebody needs to go? What if? Just going to take a minute and just have some quiet.
Exactly. Now, I should ask you, what is your current duties here now have changed? They've added on, Eric, because this is so much getting done. And also, frankly, even the Catholic life is a major project which has improved and kept getting busier and busier over the years. What exactly are you doing these days now?
My job, my role was split in two. And so at this point, I have more time now that I can devote to the magazine. And what that's going to allow me to do is to develop the stories more, connect more with our parishes, and really find other ways to promote the magazine. We know that the magazine is well received, get a lot of compliments, and our pastors are very excited about the magazine. But let's see where we can take it. You know, how can we grow it? And so I'm very excited to have more time just to work on the content of the magazine.
It's a major media project. We have to also remember that, number one, not everybody uses the internet. Some people listen to the radio, some people don't listen to the radio. Some people watch video stuff, other people don't watch video stuff. A lot of people like to have a real book or a real magazine in their hand.
Yeah, it forces you to be quiet. You know, it forces you to open it page by page. Nothing happens that you aren't expecting. Little ads don't pop up. And, you know, other distractions that come along. Yeah. You know, so you're there with your magazine.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, really getting into some of these stories. The folks I've talked to, we've talked to so many people, you know, as we're putting the magazines together, and just fascinating, fascinating stories. People I would have never had a chance to meet.
You also not only get to read about these couples, for example, or whatever the case may be, but you also, in most cases, get to see pictures of them. So you can kind of put a face to the words, that they're real people. You managed to get quite a large number of people to contribute and also to take some of the really good photography for this magazine.
Yeah. We've been very well blessed. Yeah. Yeah.
What is in the current issue, or when is the next issue coming up? I should ask you that first.
Yeah, well, the current issue is a very sensitive, very topical issue. And there's a gal by the name of Valentina, and some folks have probably heard. She's from Ukraine. Just a fascinating story of how she got to the United States and to Chippewa Falls, mm-hmm. you know, right here in our diocese. And she had an encounter with Christ, which has propelled her to give that encounter to everybody she can meet, especially the folks back home in Ukraine. And she's made that her mission for the last several years, first starting out by doing pilgrimages, and then most recently she's been doing humanitarian relief and mobilizing just so much of our diocese and shipping so many things across. So she's our cover story for December. And we have, you know, some of her story, you know, in here, but it's just, it's so much lacking. Very interesting, though, what I would encourage you to do is to look at, we're going to have an online version of the story, and that'll be out. Well, it's already out. And we have some early interviews of her and Chris Roth, when she first got started. And it talks about her early mission, you know, and that really is how the Chalice of Mercy begins. And it just listen to her heart. And listen to how she describes, you know, what she's been called to do. And then most recently, you know, the work that she's doing with soldiers that are injured and the folks who've been displaced. And it's just hard to imagine what life is like in her homeland, you know.
I recall Chris contacting me several years ago now to talk to this young woman named Valentina, and he was on with her. And Chalice of Mercy, and talking to these doctors in Ukraine about pro-life issues and things like that. And, you know, now, the last time we talked to her, it was quite a while back, but because she had all these inside ideas as to where to go in Ukraine to get things delivered, and she had relatives, which I hope sincerely are doing well, she was entrusted with a very, very large amounts of medical stuff that she could get there. Mm-hmm. And but when you think about how this all fit together.
Yeah.
You know, this...
We talk about supply chain problems. We talk about logistics. We talk about shipping. You know, everything's tied up. And here is this gal getting stuff over to the Ukraine. You know, oh, yeah, we
in
can
the
have
midst
that
of
over
a war.
There next
yeah.
week.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. Well.
And she was never trained for this kind of thing.
Just yeah. responding. Really just responding yeah, yeah. to what she sees in front of her.
I think that she's going to be...
very fascinating.
In one of the histories of the diocese, this is going to be one of the major stories going on. Yeah. You know, we have other things going on. We're you know, obviously servant of God, Father Walieski, and at times when all of a sudden extraordinary things happen, and extraordinary people from the diocese just kind of come up to deal with it.
Yeah,
it's really remarkable. So this will be out. What's the date this is going to be out?
Well, this is our December issue, so this will all be in everybody's mailboxes. Or if you didn't get it, you can pick it up at church.
Okay, I did not get this one yet. I don't believe.
Yeah,
I'll check.
Okay. And then January, February, we always feature pro-life, respect life, and just, you know, what does that mean to us, you know? And this year is unique because we do have Roe versus Wade that's been repealed. And so now, you know, the big question is, well, now what are we going to do, you know? Well, our work is certainly not done. And our work is just, I think, if anything, has just been energized. In this issue, we really ponder, what is the meaning of life? We ponder that question, because without an answer to that question, what is the meaning of life, how can you begin to talk about the sanctity of life? But if you have the understanding of what is the meaning of life, why are we here, who made us, you know, what is our purpose, if you have a right understanding of that, then everything else makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a very tumultuous time. When you've got everything broken down to state by state now and all that. But and a lot of people just have to understand that, you know, there's more than just the potential of something not happening. It's a difficult thing to explain. And who all has the authors of this? Who's been putting this together? I mean, what people have you talked to about this?
Yeah, so our cover story is a couple, Mitch and Brianna Wentland. And they live up in Marathon, and they have discovered their identity as a family through a program called the Domestic Church.
Okay.
And a lot of people have heard about that, and it is pretty much what it sounds like. So Domestic Church. So we think about church as, you know, our building, our parish, you know, we think about church like that. But really the Domestic Church is bringing our family through the eyes of the church, you know. So a lot of times you've heard about that, like our families are like a little mini church, you know, and the faith is passed on through our families. I mean, our parents had faith, or other people that we know had faith, and that's why we have faith today, you know. So taking the idea of the domestic church and bringing that as the way that as a way of living is what this family's doing. So we're going to listen to their story. Several other families too, in the January, February issue, just be in Catholic families.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, unashamed, unashamed Catholic families.
How's your family doing these days? I don't even know how old everybody is anymore.
Well, you know, our oldest is 27, and our youngest is 19. And so we have that, it's just really that kind of sweet spot of you know, early professionals, you know, and just watching these kids develop has been just fascinating.
We went to Madison for Thanksgiving, which we haven't been able to do for a couple of years, mostly because of weather. And it's just kind of bizarre. There's some of these people that I knew since my wife and I first met more than 35 years ago. And now, you know, like one guy's out of law school, and he's applied to work for the State Department, and you know, and all these things are going on. It's amazing how quickly they used to be kids.
How quickly everybody else grows up, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You and I are
we're the same
immune,
as we've always been. We haven't
right?
changed, yeah. But it's really just remarkable to see them and to you know, see them getting engaged and doing all these things going on, and life keeps going. Sadly, as happens everywhere, we've lost family members. And so as this goes on, especially when these people who used to be like, you know, like grade school kids or early high school kids are now 40 or whatever, they're beginning to understand that these Thanksgivings that we have, they're trying to draw together as much of the remaining family as possible.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a wonderful thing. And interestingly, the one guy who's now the attorney going to work for the State Department, apparently there was an article in the New York Times about something dealing with faith. And he wrote something about how his faith is being restored. He's trying to get a State Department job in Europe at a German-speaking country because he has a real knack for German, but he realized he was losing it. So he began reading the Bible in German. And he says, in addition to getting his German back again, he says, it's amazing what how his faith has improved. And as interestingly enough, the letter he wrote as a response to the article to the editor was published in the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, this is a good, so here he is writing this stuff about faith.
Right.
It's wonderful to see.
Yeah, it's a source of strength for folks who are believers to mm-hmm. listen to stories of other people that come into the faith.
Yeah.
And it's also a source of potential for people that have been away from the faith to see that there are ways to come back into the faith.
Yeah.
As you're looking forward, you know, our March-April issue mm-hmm. Is going to be during Lent and Easter this year, and the cover story on that is a couple who has come into the faith, you know, and listening to their story, and, you know, it just gives us a reason to say, yeah, you mm-hmm. know, this is why we're doing it. And this is a very good thing.
And this young man who wrote this thing, who now has gone through law school and is thinking of working with the State Department and has gotten married, he was an extreme premature baby. He weighed, I think, 16 ounces when he was born. And there was this government program for care at the time. Thank goodness there was. You know, and he's fine. I mean, he's somewhat small stature, but he's got this huge heart. But here he was, he could easily have not made it. Mm. And fortunately, you know, they cared enough about this little 16-ounce kid.
The human body is so resilient. You know, and yeah. it fascinates. You know, that at the youngest point and at the oldest point,
yeah.
you know, just, you know, I was with my mother-in-law as she was dying the other day. And it's just the human body is just so much created, you know, by God and, you know, for us to just marvel at.
Yeah.
And even as you're taking your last breath, you know, you just really give glory to God.
When my, you know, my dad passed away, quite a number of years ago now, but I was with him. I was the only child, and I was taking, my wife and I were both taking care of him. And, you know, what do you say to your father as he takes his last breath? I simply said to him, Dad, think of God. Just think of God. Most important thing I could say to him. Don't worry about us. Don't worry about thank you. Don't worry about we love you. This is your time. You know? And so I figured, well, it probably did some good somehow.
Those are the moments, you know. I mean, remembering the time each of our children were born and being mm-hmm. right there as they first were presented. And then also with my parents, you know, as well as they were leaving the earth, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's just, this is what life is about.
Yeah. And, it goes by quick.
Wow.
It goes by quick.
Amen.
Now, what traditions do your family have that you have, either Advent or Christmas, that you have acquired from your parents? Is there certain stuff you do every year, or have you made new traditions?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, growing up as an only child, you know, everything was about me. So, you know, it was, especially when I was younger, it was the, you know, Christmas and, you know, being surprised. And I can still remember the feeling that I had when I was down in the basement, and, you know, obviously my parents were upstairs and they had done the full thing with a tree and whatnot. They must have given me something downstairs to keep me out of the... Anyway, so, you know, I come upstairs and it was just like, you know, nothing you could ever forget. Yeah. You know, it's just everything, the tree was lit, the presents were all out, everything, you know, it was just like, wow, you know, this is it. And so we did that with our kids as well. You know, we had the, you know, Santa come and, you know, got that sense of, just a sense of wonder and awe and just kind of like, you know, where everything's coming from, every, you know, it's just all here. But really, I think more recently, you know, we've centered our Christmas, especially around the cathedral. Our family is musical, you know, we all like to sing. And this year will be a first for our family. We'll all be singing in the choir at the cathedral for the midnight mass. There's a concert, there's a half an hour concert before the mass, 11:30. You know, there's 200 people that get up in the middle of the night because something happened 2,000 years ago, and we're still here having fun with it. But but really, though, this will be a very special time for our family, you know, living it through the context of the Mass, and especially the midnight Mass.
And all of you in the choir singing.
Yeah, this is a first, and so we've been practicing.
I hope so.
We've been practicing, and so this should be good. Yeah, no, you know, Joyce wanted to have this year, and so we all said, well, of course, you know, we'd love to do this. This is fun.
You know, I've been doing something in one form or another on the air for 40 years now at Christmas time, and one of the nuttiest things, it was just delightful. 1980, my first radio job, I was in Menominee, Wisconsin, at a little FM station, college town. And it was getting close to Christmas, and the radio station director, program manager, comes over and he hands me a Santa Claus suit. And I got to go, what is this? And he goes, well, you know, you're the new guy here, and I think this will fit you because it fit him. He says, there's a daycare center in Menominee, and there was a whole bunch of little kids who had just immigrated from the Middle East. They were not Christian kids. They were probably Muslims. They'd heard about this Santa Claus thing, right? And you were going to be the one to go there. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. Mm. Yeah. And this church had the daycare center in the basement, but they had those thick block glass windows that let light through, but were basically, you couldn't break through them at all. And as I was walking along this thing, I don't know if they knew I was coming, but you could hear through this glass that was thick, this little kid is going crazy, right? And I would purposely put the red sleeve of my outfit up against the glass so they could see the red as and the noise got louder.
You know, they're going,
and it was like, I've never played Santa Claus before, but it was just like, you know, I can't believe that so much, such a little silly thing could bring so much complete, utter joy to these completely innocent little kids who had maybe been through a whole bunch of bad stuff. But that was amusing. That was good.
Yeah, it's fun to see the kids light up. And, yeah. You know, just to...
We used to play an audio recording back in you know, again, in the early 80s that the Air Force would put on of them tracking Santa. Now they have it on a computer screen with animations and all this stuff. And frankly, being a radio guy, there's no imagination to it.
Yeah.
We used to have this recording where, you know, they'd have this guy, you know, and it was theoretically in a jet. We're coming up on this and we can see something. It's a reindeer, you know? And it was beautiful. And now they've got this animated, it looks like all the Saturday morning cartoons you've ever seen. But we're not going to use that this year. Don't worry. We're not.
I'm not going to put that. We might put an excerpt on someday just to show people what it used to be like. But that's a lot of fun. It's a lot of good stuff. I love the music of Christmas, not just the carols, but there's so much. When I was a choral guy in college, we did Pergolesi's Magnificat and Vivaldi's Gloria. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this stuff is so beautiful. Et in terra pax hominibus. I mean, it floats. You know, it just floats. If you have a chance to listen to some of this stuff, most of it's on YouTube now.
And one of the other things we're starting to do at Christmas, being as our son-in-law is an electrical engineer, so he loves lights.
Oh, no.
And so he is decorating the house in ways that it has never been decorated before. So, but just, you know, just having the Christmas tree lit, you know, and having all the lights out at night and just, you know, sitting there again, kind of in the silence, just really pondering, you know, why are we doing this, you know? What's our purpose for doing this?
We're out in the middle of cornfields and with a fairly long gravel driveway. And we still do a thing that the Hispanics, the Mexican-Americans did in Texas. Originally they put these paper sacks out with candles in them to form a little pathway.
That's so effective.
Yeah, we do that too, but now we probably put LEDs in there as opposed to, but I, you know, the little things like that that you do that are just fun. Mm-hmm. And even though we don't have a lot of people driving by, you know, we put stuff on the house and we occasionally put up a tree, we wrap a bunch of LED solar lights around it. So go on by, they see this little bright spot.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, it's symbolic of the light of the world, you know, coming to us. I mean, it's nice, and it doesn't have to cost a lot. You can buy LED lights for next to nothing these days, and they're usually solar powered or powered by AA batteries, and you can just click it on and the batteries last practically all Christmas. So it doesn't require, you know, not a major expense going on. Did your kids make homemade decorations at all?
We always did, yeah. We would make, you know, everything and anything and decorate, you know, in all the ways. And that was, you know, that was always special. I mentioned the Jesse tree earlier, mm-hmm. and just tracing the salvation history with a different, each little leaf on the tree, you know, representing a certain thing. And that was a great craft project, mm-hmm. and that lasted, you know, two or three or four years, you know, and then the kids just learned, you know, they learned about the Bible, they learned the Bible stories, and it cooks them all together, you know, so that's, you know, I don't remember how many hundred prophecies there are, mm-hmm. you know, in the Old Testament, you know, announcing the Messiah, but it helps to do that.
Yeah, we bought one of these little, you know, you go to some Hallmark store or something, and they had a little hinged heart with two ovals inside to put pictures. And the outside said, First Christmas Together. And I think it was like $7.99.
Yeah.
And frankly, I wasn't making that much money in my second job. So we waited till after Christmas when it was half price. It was $3.99. And we've left the sticker on to remind ourselves that, you know, even though we didn't have a lot of money, it was good.
Yeah, the ornaments, though. The ornaments are really the kind of the archive of the family.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and especially as now with our kids and they decorate the tree. Mm-hmm. And then remember what this one was and remember this ornament came from here. And, you know, my wife remembers, you know, all of them, and I remember some of them, you know, but it's just those memories, you know, that come back.
Bishop Callahan, apparently, I mean, I've seen his tree in the past. I mean, it's pretty much, I think, similar every year. He has ornaments given to him by parishioners and friends and loved ones that go back quite a ways.
Right.
And so every single one of these things has got...
It's a story.
A story,
you know, it's
exactly.
A story, and it's fascinating, you know, to have him start talking about some of the ornaments.
Yeah. And one of the ones we have that we put out every year, one of my friends from church, his mom was a teacher, Mrs. Corinda, and they had these little church fairs, and they'd sell stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And she back then there was a New York coffee called Chock Full of Nuts, and it came with a scoop. And she took the little scoop, and then she stuck in a little like plastic bit of holly and a little plastic reindeer and glued them in place.
Mm-hmm, right? Sure.
And all these years later, we still have this Chock Full of Nuts scoop with a little reindeer inside. You know, and it just remembering of what a nice lady she was.
Yeah,
you know, stuff like that.
Joyce was a piano teacher, and so a lot of her students would give her ornaments at Christmas, mm-hmm, and you know, mm-hmm. it just brings all that right back.
Yeah, yeah. We had a choral teacher in high school, Mr. Richley, who, this was before, you know, there was that chill that happened when we had school prayer still at the time when I was a freshman or so in high school. We stood the Lord's Prayer at the beginning of the day in a public school. But he had these very elaborate Christmas programs and very religious. Also, not just Christian. He also had, you know, a couple of Jewish songs too for our Jewish friends. El Yivna Hagalil, Baruch Yivna Hagalil. We're singing that. I have no idea what it meant, but it was fun. But and then we do the holiday chorus and we do all these things. But it was, you know, he had no. It wasn't a winter concert. It was a Christmas concert. No. But it was very nice, and you know, I've really enjoyed choral music ever since then, even though I'm not singing it anymore. I'm kind of jealous of your family singing in the choir. That's pretty good. What do they sing? Are they sopranos, second sopranos?
We have everything.
Altos?
Yeah, we have the sopranos, altos, a tenor, and the bass. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I know you play a musical instrument. You play violin, and I believe quite well.
I do, yeah.
And how long have you been doing that?
Ever since third grade.
Wow. So you know a violin like the back of your hand.
Yeah, no, it's been a long time.
I bet you it has. Any other family members play instruments as well?
Well, you know, we have to have the string quartet, you know, so our we've got the violins, we've got a violist and a cellist, and Joyce plays piano. And
so you guys could record a little Christmas thing that we could play.
We can do most anything, you know.
Yeah, yeah, we'd love
it's
to have
fun,
that.
Though.
You know, the problem, we'd like to have Christmas music from the various Catholic schools here. Mm. But there are copyright problems. The sheet music they have is copyrighted for playing to an audience. Mm-hmm. It is not copyrighted for recording and broadcasting. And
right,
it certainly
right.
is not. You certainly cannot make an album out of it or something like that.
Right.
And so we have to be a little bit careful what we play.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you guys wanted to play "O Little Town of Bethlehem" or something, we would. Please. Bring it in.
The one challenge is we're all spread out. So
okay, well, we had to go to Zoom and do it all together. Have you seen any of these things? I just don't know how they do it. There are these groups, especially during the lockdown, that were doing Christmas music largely, mm-hmm. and they're all in their separate places with headphones and microphones on. I do not, for the life of me, know how they were able to hear the others as well enough to stay on the same pitch and key and tempo, or whether they were able to somehow auto-tune all it together.
Yeah.
But it's remarkable.
Our middle daughter put one of those together for the graduating class in her college. And so she laid down the initial track with the time code on it and then gave it to her friends. And then they had the headphones because they were listening to the track. And then they would sing their part. And then they sent all of those files back to her and she blended it all together. And it was quite remarkable. It was quite a surprise for the school.
Yes, I'm somewhat, you know, able to edit, you know, audio, but I've never even thought of anything doing like that.
Yeah.
And it is inspiring to see it.
Yeah.
That these people during some of the most adverse circumstances when they just can't get together.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure there are probably some people doing that in Ukraine as well right now. It's amazing that they're doing it. But the fact that we can do all these things, that we can, not only can you hear this show on the radio, you know, anybody got a radio, they can turn it on, they can hear it. But also we can stick it on other venues so you can hear it wherever you want to be. It's just remarkable. But that really blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine a choral group doing that. I mean,
yeah.
Someday I'll have to watch it being done. I'll understand it more.
Yeah.
But it was just like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
She was wondering the same thing, but it all did come together. I think there was only one person that had to redo their part because it didn't quite, you
didn't
know,
quite
line
match
up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But it's like a jigsaw puzzle, you know.
And they sound great.
Yeah.
You know, I'm one of these guys who's a sucker for these, like, America's Got Talent or England's Got Talent. I watch them on YouTube. I don't watch the TV show. But I'm so inspired by, you know, here all these guys come up, four guys, and they look like they should be gangbangers, right? And they're singing some Bach quartet thing, you know. It's like, wow. Or just someone who you don't think they're going to do much of anything, you know. And I was trying to find a copy of something from last year from Annie. You know, the song will come out tomorrow, but I did not want a little kid singing it. And I found that this one person who was an adult who sang it, and even the people in the judges were going, oh, please not that song. And this person put so much adult feeling into it that it was remarkable.
Well, that is the music. You know, the music, there's a old saying, you know, music you pray, when you sing you pray twice. You know, but it really has you coming through the expression of the music.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it. There's just nothing like live music.
Yeah, it's really wonderful.
And I think the more we are exposed to the recorded and kind of the virtual, the more the live is going to just really be something that'll turn your head.
Yeah, it really is.
So I know that, keep that going, though. You know,
the Cathedral Choir periodically has done, as at Berger, the Eyes of All Wait Upon Thee. Mm. And I've sung that in college. And that's, number one, a hard song to sing, especially if you're not real good at it. But it's a gorgeous, gorgeous song. A little complicated to listen to sometimes.
Yeah, every Sunday, you know, on the live stream as well, if you're not able to get down there.
Yeah.
But I would encourage everybody to get down. He puts together, you know, three substantial things.
Now, the Christmas Eve will be live streamed, I'm assuming.
Christmas Eve with the midnight. We'll do the concert beforehand, and then and then the midnight mass, you know, the joke is, what time does your midnight mass start? You know, our midnight mass starts at
midnight.
Hey. And then... and then the next morning at 10:30 as well. So it's just beautiful time. And it's, you know, there's so many families that come together, and and you know, the liturgy is just, you know, it's really something.
The pre-mass concert will be streamed, I'm assuming.
Yeah, at 11:25.
Okay.
11:25, we will. It's just remarkable. The choir starts at the back of the cathedral. And then we just process as we're singing up the main aisle, you know, and so the church just gradually gets filled with music and the musicians. And then the concert, before the mass, the concert's in the sanctuary. Mm-hmm. So we're right up front, you know, and very intimate right there. You know, we do our selections that we have, and then we sing our way back out again. And and it's just, you know, it is just, and then the handbells, they have the handbells going. And it's just, it's very remarkable.
Many, many years ago, again, I was in college in a chorale. We sang with other groups as well in a church. And that was before bell ringers got really, really popular. And this group of, I remember there were Methodist bell ringers. I remember that because I was once a Methodist. But they not only were playing, but they did transitions, you know. And I remember our choral conductor said, you could just see a tear going down his face because it was so beautiful.
Yeah.
They did a version of Now the Green Blade Rises, which of course is both Christmas and Easter, you know, depending on the words, and they accelerated it and made it so full of energy. It was just, and the waves of sound were going over you. There's so much of this stuff out there right now, and basically one of the best places to go to find out about this is look at some things in Catholic Life magazine, see what's going on, but also the calendar of Diocese of La Crosse, the event calendar. How do you, for example, and for those who have not done this, how do you hook into this Christmas Eve event that's going to be going on at the cathedral?
Well, I mean, the easiest way would be to go to the Diocese of La Crosse homepage, diolc.org, and right on there is the schedule, or the cathedral website, cathedralsjworkman.org. Right on the homepage, you'll see the midnight mass. We'll have that there. Mm-hmm. And then if you miss it, you can also watch it. Or if you liked it so much and you want to replay it, it's all kept as well.
Yeah, the diocesan website has, boy, is it full. The online courses that are there now, all the stuff that's going on, the calendar, it is just, you know, it's a very dynamic diocese to begin with, but to see it all put together like this is just remarkable.
Yeah, that's our main way of getting information out, you know, organized by the offices or the ministries that, that we serve here. All of us are serving, you know, in line with Bishop Callahan. You know, these are his offices, and we're setting that together. So many of the things that are available, like marriage and family life, for example, youth ministry, social concerns, there's so much going on, vocations. You know, you can learn about our seminarians. It's just, you know, you could spend a long time and not discover everything we have out there.
Yeah, it's a lot going on. And it's amazing the stories that happen that will not necessarily get on there. Two times now in recent months, and I'm going to probably save some of this for the New Year's Eve and New Year's Day broadcast, but there's a couple of things that have happened with our staff that have just, you know, and I was not aware of anything until I hear about it from the person. You know, our young adult ministry guy had a stroke. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't talked to him for several months. He goes, well, when I got it from my stroke. I went, you're what? And he's telling me about this, about how he couldn't read and he couldn't speak. And he's lying in bed saying, you know, the dark side of him, the evil one, as he put it, was saying, your life is ruined. You're not going to be able to do anything anymore. And then he said, no, even if I'm this way for the rest of my life, I still have Jesus with me. And then the next morning he wakes up and slowly he begins to read the signs. And then he looks at his cell phone and he could read his email pretty good. And since I was doing this show with him, he obviously got to talk again. And here's these doctors going, your brain rewired itself. We're not sure how it did it. And then most recently, of course, Andrew from our vocations department blew me away completely out of the water a few weeks ago when, you know, he had a hip replacement and it really began hurting badly. He lowered his foot and he couldn't pick it up again. And he went to the hospital and they drew a sample of some swollen area. The entire hip was filled with bacteria. And they said, we're going to have to take it out, put it back in again. Another 12 weeks of rehab. Well, he came back here. He had just started the job here. And of course, they said, of course, do what you have to do. But before you do, why don't we ask Father Walieski for some help? And then also the bishop came in and said, yeah, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that too. And then he tells me, he goes back to the hospital. They put him under, and they take him out of the anesthesia. He goes, how'd it go? And he goes, we can't find any infection. Here I am sitting here going, speechless. We cannot make any claims. We're not trying to make any claims. That's not our job. But when you see these things happen to people that you know and have met, and it's their own words, 2 days earlier, it was a massive infection. You ask for the intersection of service from God, servant of God, Father Walieski. They put a little incision to start working on it. And I go, wait a minute. There's nothing here. They draw a sample of the liquid, empty, no bacteria. They said, we don't know what happened. Now, for what it's worth, that documentation will probably be shipped off to Rome. Someday we'll have another discussion about that. It ain't a slam dunk. Never is. But just you hear these stories.
Yeah, that's our faith. That's our faith alive. And
yeah.
And even the testimony to, if this is what I'm given, I'm still going to have Jesus by my side. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's who we are. Yeah. That's our faith. And those witness stories are so interesting.
It's wonderful, yeah. And I was just telling Eric before the show that a few weeks ago we did a show for Veterans Day, and we had Father Targonsky on and Eric on, who are both veterans, as I am too, but from 50 years earlier. And a couple of days before, I go to this little secondhand store that's part of a sheltered workshop near me. And right there staring at me is a New York Times bestseller called The Faith of the American Military. And this is exactly what I needed. I said to myself, God, thank you. That's really good of you to do this. And I pick up the book, and there's a little short book behind it saying, sometimes God surprises you. And I cannot tell you how many times I've gone there. And also I went over to the CDs, and here was a compilation of patriotic music with music from all of the armed forces. And I'm sitting there going, this is not the first time this has happened.
Right.
I stopped there today on the way over, and I found some music that I may want to use for Advent from an album called Miracles. Mm. I'm not saying this is some kind of thing from above, but sometimes I do think that we are just so inclined. People cannot see this. Here, I'll hit it on the, hear that? That is a brass figure of Jesus with his arm extended, kind of like the Sermon on the Mount. And the first one of these I found was more than 50 years ago in Washington, D.C. I have kept it for all these years, put a little marble base on it, had it at the radio station I was running. I was hesitant to bring it here for fear it might get lost, because it really means a lot to me. And one day before I came to go record something with the bishop, I stopped at the Goodwill store, which is two blocks away. After 52 years, here's one of them sitting on the shelf for $1.99. And I started laughing in the store. People thought I was crazy. It's exactly the same one that I absolutely cherish, that someday when I'm in my casket, in my mass, I want it on my casket. Mm. Because this means a great deal to me. I love the symbolism of it. Mm. But anyway, the stuff all around you, And this time during Advent, boy, it's a real good time to just kind of quiet down and think about all the blessings. Mm. My golly, you've got blessings, I've got blessings. I can't even begin to tell you how many. And did your family survive the 2 years of COVID pretty well? How did they go?
You know, we spent time together, you know, and kept ourselves going, but it definitely was a challenging time, you know.
Yeah, we were stuck at home, and we, you know, did learn how to cook totally differently. We got bored with what we were eating, so we began experimenting with whole different foods, and it was very nice.
Yeah, we took to the exercising, though, as well. We rode more than 1,000 miles on our bike over the summer. You know, so that was our chief form of getting out.
Right, right.
We took our bikes.
So we all luck out.
But, you know, you work with what you have.
Yeah. It's nice to be a part of it. You guys, because you're part of this cathedral so much and also in the choir, you really feel like you're integrated into it. But even if you can't sing, if you can just be an usher or you can do just anything, opening a door for people.
Even if you just come and be in church.
Yes, that's a real good idea. Just be there.
You know, the essence of what we do and why we do it is to become.
Yeah.
And, you know, to come and, as they say, face to face.
Yeah, but it's a real good time not to overburden your parish priest with unnecessary stuff right now. Mm-hmm. Because they are really focused very heavily on trying to make this the most wonderful Christmas they could possibly do again this year.
Yeah,
you know, that's good.
Looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I think it's going to be nice. I'm going to, weather permitting, we'll see what happens. We went to a midnight service at the cathedral when we first got here, but we had moved here from Texas, and we weren't paying attention to the weather. And we're driving home in this little Suzuki, and even though the heater was going full blast, we're still scraping. Our breath was freezing on the inside of the windshield. We're scraping it as we drive, right? We got home and I turned on the weather. It's 20 below zero.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, gee. But,
yeah. Well, that's the benefit. You see, we live 8 blocks from the cathedral.
There you
go. You know, we literally can just walk over.
Yeah,
so there's no reason that we won't be there.
No, you'll be there. Yeah, you know, you'll be there. We may there. We'll have to wait and see what the weather does. But boy, that sounds like a pretty exciting thing. Jack Felsheim, but what is your official title now, I should ask you?
Editor of Catholic Life.
Editor of Catholic Life and a person who has contributed a lot and to get this where we are at today. So, as usual, anything going on that we should do that is last minute, you know, if you get hold of me on a Tuesday, I can probably stick it in on for the weekend show. Mm. But thank you for the overview, and thank you for all of the suggestions. Thank you for the singing. I'm really excited. Will I be able to hear you specially?
You know, that's the thing about singing in the choir is you don't want to be
heard. You don't want to do that. Yes, I know that.
You don't want to be heard. Yeah, so if you can hear the person in the choir, then
you're not doing it right. Yeah, blend. Yes. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, this has been fun, Jack.
All right, take care now. Recently, both on the air and off the air, I have been focusing on what are known as the corporal acts of mercy. And this is not to be confused with the corporate acts of mercy. A corporate act of mercy is when you call technical support and they answer on the first or second ring. This is, well, more seriously, something that we look at all the time in the Catholic Church and in other areas as well. They are things like feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, clothe the naked, visit the imprisoned, shelter the homeless, visit the sick, bury the dead. These are corporal, physical, human acts of mercy. And as Gentlemen Collecting for Charity said in Dickens' Christmas Carol, this is the time of year when want is felt most keenly. There are record numbers of people going to food shelves to get more food to supplement their basic food insecurity. The folks at Catholic Charities report that quite a number of people who are staying at their homeless overnight warming centers actually are holding down jobs, but they simply are not making enough money to make the rent. Clothes closets are popping up for families who cannot afford to clothe their children properly to go to school. Now, of course, in many ways you can donate food, you can donate clothes, things like that. But frankly, one of the most effective ways of helping is to go to one of these organizations that you're particularly drawn to and make a cash or check donation. For example, you could go to a food store and buy a dozen cans of some kind of food and give it to a food shelf. But if you gave them the exact same amount of money that you spent on those cans, because they have certain connections, they can buy even more than you can.
So as they say, prayerfully consider these acts of mercy and find a place that you feel represents what you feel strongly about and contribute to them. Most faith-based charities are the most efficient with your money, and most have a way that you can even contribute online. And thank you for helping out during Advent and these holidays.
The whole idea of Advent is the understanding of the fact that the Son of God entered into our humanity at a point in time in human history. So we know, and we know that Jesus existed. We know that there are stories that are told about him. We know that he was, in fact, a real human being. And we know those things not only from the Catholic Christian sources, namely the scriptures, the gospels, etc., but we know them from other sources of history that allow us to understand that Jesus was a human being in reality. Advent is a season that has two kind of basic understandings about it. First of all, we remind ourselves of history. We remind ourselves of the fact that God made a promise to our first parents, Adam and Eve, that there would be a Redeemer, that God was not going to abandon us and move ourselves to the love of God. Then we start moving into Advent, which tells the history of the fact that Jesus came the first time. And so the second Sunday of Advent begins. We start hearing about the Annunciation. We start hearing about the various ways in which prophets spoke in the Old Testament, reminding us of the fact that there was always hope for the human race, God's promise. And then we start to understand that this child that is born into humanity, he is the risen Savior. The child grew into manhood. It was there that he started to teach how we are to live today. And we prepare for his arrival every single time we celebrate the Holy Mass. Advent teaches us the depth of God's love for us and helps us to understand this a little bit more every single time we celebrate Advent. And the older I get, the more deeply I become entrenched in how important and energized I become because of the celebration of Advent.
That was Bishop William P. Callahan, the Bishop of the Diocese of La Crosse, with a little commentary on the second Sunday of Advent. My name is Jack Socia. Going to leave you with something that's just a little bit of history. We always tend to think of Christmas in terms of our own lives or maybe stories our parents told us. Just amazing to think about it. The music you're about to hear to finish the show was recorded by a group of singers in 1898. 1898. Their voices and their music and their loveliness bringing in the Advent season and the Christmas season cascade across not just the decades, but the century to bring it to you this particular day. So enjoy it, and I'll see you again next week on Connecting the Diocese.